get
so
why.
it's not taking a DHCP IP address.
Right.
Oh, okay. But it is set for DHCP.
It wouldn't read infinitum. Only assume.
Is there a setting to turn off the wired?
So they said next week's last meeting.
No, you can use it either wireless or wired.
Right. But is there...
I have it on wireless.
But is there a setting to turn on or off wired?
I think there was.
No.
When we were looking in settings, are you sure?
No.
I thought I saw one.
Because I have a box and I have
well,
a smart TV.
Well, it has skip when you set it up. You can just skip and then it goes to the other one.
No. So what I was going to say is I have a box that I use for Cody and a smart TV. And both of them act differently between wired and wireless, but they both require me to do some kind of configuration to move between the two. And they do. The smart TV, I can plug in a cable.
Right.
But unless I tell it that I'm using wired, uh-huh. It won't work. And on the same token, if I want to switch to wireless, I have to go and switch to wireless. I have to go through the wireless setup.
Every time.
Yeah, say I pull the cable, then I have to go through. Pulling the cable doesn't activate wireless. Me saying I want a wireless connection activates wireless.
Well, hers was every time you turned it on, it was going to the router, and you'd have to put in the password. Why? Because it asks to save the password.
Every single time.
Sounds like it needs a firmware update.
And then
update.
When it would go to ASUS,
we did all the firmware updates.
I had to set it all up again every time I wanted to use it. So I got frustrated. There's no way I could have.
TV. And it's frozen again.
And she only has 2.3 up.
Yeah,
it's improved.
Jiggle that.
We increased it with Telmex, and it has improved.
It has improved. Well, she has so little when we did the.
To the U.S.
To the U.S. Right.
Check the IP and everything.
Right.
It was so low. It was only 2.3. Well, that box won't run on 2.3.
You're talking about the speed?
That's all she watches, Drama Fever.
It won't run on 2.3, especially if you have other computers on. The phone and the tablet.
Is that lit up, Scott?
It's working, but it's blue.
I'm hooked up to
the and it just froze again.
This.
It's that cable?
Like, they get Fox News, but it's not live. It's like 2 hours behind.
All right, well, we may not be able to get that camera any farther away at the moment.
Hang on, we're going to squeeze this together.
If anybody needs to recharge their devices, there's the outlet.
Yeah, that's the recommended computer club place to plug your devices in.
Probably for the Christmas lights.
It's not working. Yeah, give me a second. Let me restart the software and see if that makes a difference. But I can't reactivate it. We're almost ready. No, it's not even there. It's like. Okay, that's working. And I see my kid's cat ears moving. you should get the girls in the shot.
Here, where are they?
They're right there in the corner.
TV still working, Maggie?
Are those two pretty girls? TV still working?
Those are my girls. Yeah, they don't have school today.
Well, they got beautiful hair.
Like their mom, yeah.
So what holiday is today?
Teacher's Day.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. They had Mom's Day. There was no school. The week before that, they had an in-service day. I think what is happening is these are all celebrating. We're almost done with this. We're to the summer day.
We're ready for summer.
That's right. It's like we're done with all these kids' day. That's what it is.
There's school here in San Carlos.
Watch your glass there.
Or they go to school in Guaymas.
Say again?
Do they go to school in San Carlos or Guaymas?
In Guaymas, they go to a school, a private school called Cervino.
Is that the one that's in English?
It's one of them, yeah. Yeah, it's a bicultural school. That one's brighter, that one's bluer. Everything's... Oh, I accidentally moved my shot over. There we go.
Yeah.
So I turned on the TV and the app was going.
This is,
hey, we gotta go.
This is some kind of overall thing. All right, I'll see you after.
Thank you, sir.
Give me a call when you're done.
All right. And we're streaming there. We're almost ready.
Oh, man, even if that was a bag of marijuana.
Ah, you know what you're going to get hurt.
Well, are they marijuana brands?
Sure. You're going to get your ass hurt.
Look at this. I don't know why. I think Telmex was having a problem last week.
She's getting as bad as the water coming in.
Because this is just all working much better than it should compared to last week. I mean, we should be getting a great connection because we got a router right there cabled to a fiber optic link to Telmex. We should be getting... We should be getting close to 30 megabits a second reliable.
30 megabits a second.
Yeah, if reliable.
Really?
A long time ago.
Do you think optical will ever get to Loma Del Mar?
No. I think at this point there's a better chance that a new wireless technology will show up before optical does at Loma Del Mar.
I need those wires
that have the three colors. RCA.
Large car Montana plates right there.
Unless they're RCA.
Is that...
How does that plug in?
Chester.
Chester, the hatch is wide open on your car.
Oh, it's in my pocket. Yeah, all the windows are down, too.
I'll close it for you.
And there's raccoons crawling around in there.
He's got an app for that.
He probably...
Thank you, Richard.
No problem.
Well, and on that note, we can get started. Welcome, welcome, welcome to our second-to-last computer club for this season. I'm Scott Stimson, and you guys are the San Carlos Computer Club. So, I bet everybody's excited. They've all got their topics for this week. I've already been unsuccessful helping answer questions. We were answering Linda's question about tap adapters with no answer because we don't know what we're talking about. But we did find a tap adapter you could download from SourceForge. So if it came down to needing one, I would trust that first because SourceForge.net tends to be a well-vetted place to download software. If not, slightly more cumbersome because it's typically open-source software. And the people that write it typically write it for people that know how to write software. So it's not necessarily the most user-friendly software. But it's typically royalty-free, open-source, and vetted against malware and viruses. And so that's I don't know how to help Linda with her problem, but if what she needs is a tap adapter software... I found one on SourceForge, and that's where I would get it from. I brought a couple of topics, but I'd be interested in hearing what you folks have.
I have a question for you.
Yes, Maggie, what have you got?
Over the weekend that some of these programs that have been Vader, for example, Kodi, et cetera, when you sign up for them and you submit your email address and your PayPal account or whatever you're paying, that somehow those are being tracked. And quiet little lawsuits are going on around the world. Anybody ever hear this? And part of the settlement of the lawsuit is a gag order. So if you get sued for using Vader, for example, you can't tell your friends don't use it, or you could end up in jail. I don't know how true this is.
It does sound phony to me, too. Okay. There has been a crackdown on developers, which I believe is true. I was doing some research this last week, and Kodi is a little stalled right now because they've sent out cease and desist letters to developers of Vader, developers of these
How
plugins.
How do they find them?
I don't know, discussion groups, maybe? But so I was reading articles about developers that were becoming very shy about putting their stuff out there because of these letters.
Well, they allegedly are getting into the developers' accounts, if that's the right word, and they're finding, oh, look, here's Maggie Jones, and here's her email address, and here she's proof that she paid with PayPal. She's next. I don't know.
I don't know. You know, the copyright thing has gone on forever. And there were a couple of very famous cases where they were pursued to the end, and the person was somebody that was held liable for tens of thousands of dollars. I want to say millions, but I'm not sure if I remember that right or not. But they really, the industry went after them to make an example. And they made so many enemies making them the example that they won the appeal case. And they've never gone after anyone else since. And so I have a lot of trouble believing that they're going to go after Maggie.
Exactly, because there are millions of us.
Yeah.
Leave Maggie alone.
Yeah. Right. I mean, with the exception of them at some point deciding they have to make an example.
I hope it's not me.
But I think even being made the example, the odds of it being you are really slim.
It's probably like what happened with DirecTV. They started monitoring Viva San Carlos and picked up all the people that were doing it to make money.
I think, and they didn't bring charges against those people. They just shut them down. And I think that's what's more likely the threat that you're facing is just not being able to use it.
I also heard that Roku was partnering with Mexico and they were going to start selling them down here again.
Ooh,
but
that's
I don't
big
know
news.
What they're doing to make sure that they're not used to pirate Mexican television.
Well, that'll be really interesting because Roku was really, I mean, it was kind of funny that Televisa would go after Roku. Roku is actually one of the easiest platforms to lock down. And they say it's being used for piracy when there's piracy everywhere in Mexico with Windows PCs and Android tablets.
That's your middle name.
So like, Roku could offer Mexico options to make it impossible, or nearly impossible, to use their platform for piracy. And I can imagine the only reason they haven't, I mean, maybe that's what they've done. I'd like to see an article on that because I haven't seen anything.
I was just told. I have not heard yet.
Roku
I mean,
in
I've
Mexico. But the I would imagine the reason they've never offered that up is because that's their main business. I mean, that's who's buying Rokus are ones that can use it to load software to watch stuff illegally. As soon as they give up that control, as soon as they take control over that ability, then they've lost their market because that's all people were buying them for in the first place.
I tried to reach Roku with a VPN, and it says, you're using a VPN.
Yeah.
It's not allowed.
So, for the most part, that ends up being the service provider you're going to, like Hulu or Netflix giving you that message. That's not necessarily a Roku thing.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe it was Hulu I was trying to get.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the reasons I got the VPN, was to access that, but now I use it to access.
Well, and you know what is proven CDS to be much stuff. Much more effective than the VPN is the smart DNS stuff.
Oh, I love it.
Maggie's been using it. Jim, you still use a smart DNS, and Ed, you do too, yeah? And it's just very reliable.
For the last 7 years, 6 years.
And one of the advantages of the smart DNS is that it doesn't have the overhead of a VPN. So any traffic outside of those services like Hulu or Netflix goes out to the internet the way traffic normally goes out to the internet. So it doesn't slow down everything you're doing.
Oh, okay. Smart?
Smart DNS.
How do you download that or get that?
Tell us a little bit about it.
Go to Smart DNS.
Yeah,
Google it.
Google Smart DNS. Is it Smart DNS Proxy? Or I think it's Smart DNS. And they have like a 30-day free trial, and you can. The way it works is that you go to their website, and by doing so, you're identifying your endpoint on the internet.
Yeah.
Which is nothing to be alarmed by. Every time you go to any website, you're identifying your endpoint on the internet. That's the only way they can talk back to you. So there's nothing Nothing concerning about that. But then they take that endpoint address and they authorize it in their services as receiving traffic from specific online providers. So what they do is they maintain a list of service providers that they are selling you access to. And that list is Hulu and Netflix and Amazon Video and a bunch of other ones.
Do you have to go through a computer?
Well, you can go through a computer. You can also set up your router similar to how you had your router set up as a VPN. You can set that up as SmartDNS's DNS. So this is two different sides of things. One side of it is that you are telling your computers, whichever computers you want to have take advantage of this, or whatever devices, I should change my language to devices, whatever devices you want to have take advantage of this, you need to change those to point to SmartDNS's DNS addresses. So that configuration has to change. Last week we talked about 1.1.1.1. And that's what we're talking about, is we're talking about changing this to a different DNS than what's available through your local internet provider. By default, we're almost all using the DNS that's provided by Telmex or Megacable. And so you need to have a method for changing that. Then you need a method to go to SmartDNS and tell them when your IP address has changed. Say you've rebooted your internet connection or the power's gone out and they've come back on. What happens in our circumstances is that endpoint address changes. Your endpoint address is picked from a pool of addresses that Telmex is making available to you or Megacable is making available to you. And so when you have to refresh your device, it pulls a new number from that pool. And that new number is now your endpoint number. And it's changed. And so you have to go to SmartDNS and you have to refresh that information with your new changed number.
It does it automatically.
There is a way to do it automatically if it's set up in your router. And it does it automatically if you go to it with a web page to go look at the status of your SmartDNS. It will automatically update that. It'll automatically refresh with your new endpoint IP address. Is everybody with me so far? Any questions so far?
Yeah, does it use as much bandwidth as Rotovia?
It doesn't, but arguably it does for those specific services. In general, it doesn't. And in general, you are in Mexico. So when you go to Google, it's still in Spanish, unless you set your cookie to make it English. In general, that's with a VPN, you're literally moving your traffic out of this point and putting it at the other point. And so wherever that other point is where you're virtually existing. So if your other endpoint is in Texas, all your local related stuff is all geolocated for Texas. You're in the United States, you're in Texas. Give me an example on a VPN. If your VPN connected you in Texas and you did a Google search for what movies are playing, it would come back with all the movie theaters in Texas. If your VPN took you to England, it would be all the movie theaters there in England. That's what a VPN does. All your traffic's going back and forth across that endpoint. That is your endpoint. With a SmartDNS, your endpoint is here in Mexico. So you search for movies and you get Cinemax, hopefully. If they've done their job right, you get Cinemax. At the very least, hopefully you get it in Hermosillo. However, what they're selling you is open access. Well, open's the wrong word, but reliable access to Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Video, this list of very specific services that people outside the United States want access to when they're not in the United States. So that's the product they're selling you. They're selling you access to that list of services. And the way they do that is when you change your DNS address in your equipment, you're telling your devices to go look at Smart DNS to look up your names. So when you type in CNN.com, you're telling your device, go to Smart DNS and look up CNN.com. If it's not on their list of providers, they just point you to CNN as though you're in Mexico. Everybody following me so far? When it's Netflix, they go, wait, this is Netflix. They want Netflix as though we're in the United States. So we're going to route Netflix traffic through a different computer. So instead of sending back the Netflix address, they send back an address that they have control over. And that address they have control over acts as a proxy between you and Netflix. So Netflix believes you're in the United States, and then that proxy sends it to your computer. And it all happens because you look up a different address than the actual Netflix address.
Okay, but you can't put it on your TV.
I'm not sure what you mean.
You can, if your TV has a DNS setting. Some TVs do. Smart TVs usually have a where you change your DNS.
But I wouldn't get that deep into it. I wouldn't get too deep into configuring individual devices.
And you're plugging it into the TV so you can watch it on the TV.
Going into the Asus through the
there you go.
Infinitum.
See, that's
it's
the way.
Coming up on your television?
No.
You're watching it on the laptop?
Well, no, I'm watching it on TV, Netflix, US Netflix. I'm not sure.
That's what I was asking you.
I was going to say.
I was asking. You put the DNS. Oh, you put the DNS in that router.
Yes.
Linda.
Scott.
Okay. That's what's going on. Is that and Jim turned me on to this with a Smart DNS. They give you DNS addresses. You can stick them in the router, so you could stick them in your Buffalo.
Can't
right?
Stick them in. You can't stick them in Infinitum router.
Right. I have a Buffalo.
Yeah, you got to have a separate. You got to have a dual router system.
You got to have a separate router for this.
And I do.
I do too.
Yeah, and in general, because there are some Infinitum routers that you could do it with. But most of the new ones, they've got control over their DNS settings. So if you want control over your DNS settings, you have to buy a new router, and you've got to use the Telmex one to connect you to the internet and use this other router to do these configurations. If
Is
you're
that
gonna,
complicated?
It's not as complicated as changing the security certificates. It's something that you could learn how to do, Chester, because I know you have the skills from your previous experience working with the VPN. It's just different. It's not harder, though.
Simple. I've never done it. Scott did it.
I helped Maggie do it. And I don't think I've ever been back over there, but I got all the instructions for doing it automatically. And this is the other thing, is that some routers running a specific software like DDWRT can be set up to do that refresh when you lose power, you get a new endpoint address, mm-hmm. can be set up to to update Smart DNS automatically, so you really don't have to do anything. If I remember the way we've left Maggie's setup, if she loses power to her internet connection and gets a new endpoint IP, she has to take one of her computers on her network and go to the Smart DNS page. And that act of going to the page and signing in automatically refreshes that endpoint. So it's not a painful act, and I think that's why you've never bothered to have me come back. And
It's been working great.
Yeah. And so it can be slightly more convenient, but it's amazingly convenient to begin with after you get the router set up.
I can do it anyway. I wouldn't know how to put that information in the router to begin with, though.
Not that that's important, but what do they charge?
$35 a year.
I'm paying $17.
And you can get a discount and pay less. Lifetime discount.
Yeah, and so
I'm only paying $17.
The interesting thing about the Smart DNS I see in my mind, what I see different when I compare and contrast it to VPN, is that in the VPN situation, the onus of problems are on you. Because you're using a VPN. I mean, and some of these VPN providers, they understand what you're trying to do, and they'll deal with you as though they're selling you access to Netflix, but they haven't built their business model around it. Their business model is secure, encrypted channels, right, point to point. Some of them have gotten into, well, we're doing it for Netflix, and so they're helping you figure out how to do Netflix. But even the changes that they recommend are changes the onus is on you. You have to make the changes. You have to choose a new endpoint for your VPN. You have to get in and change those things. Smart DNS is selling you a list, an access to a list of service providers, and their job is making sure those providers are always accessible. So to me, that's a big distinction, is that you've got the other end, this service that you're hiring, their job is to make sure that you always have access to Netflix, to make sure you always have access to Hulu. Otherwise, they don't have a product to sell you. And it's a distinction between Smart DNS and VPN. Jim, did you have a question?
No, it's actually to add to the Smart DNS. They do offer you VPN services also. You just have to go into your Smart DNS page and enable it, and they'll give you, actually they have tons of servers all around the world. And you just install them, and you click when you want to be in Denmark, you go to the VPN and you're in Denmark.
It says it's $49.90 for 24 months.
So you get both services with
Smart DNS.
Really reasonable.
I just renewed it for $17.
For a year.
This what's the lifetime?
2 years for $49.90. Doesn't say lifetime.
No?
I was getting a lifetime. It's a lifetime price. Mm-hmm. I looked up. I Googled
it.
Oh,
I got you.
And it's like $17, $8, whatever it is.
Very inexpensive.
It's for life. So once you first do it, it just sends you that same price.
That same price each
every
time.
Year.
Oh. Hey, the VPNs, is that an additional charge, or it's part of the
anybody
service?
Anybody that has a paid subscription to Smart DNS also has the VPNs. As I said, you have to go to your home page there and enable it.
So that's
They're not as fast as Whitopia or whatever.
But you could still do Bank of America banking.
Oh, yeah.
Or bring up your local newspaper without any problems.
That. They're fantastic. They're not very good for streaming. But that's what you have the Smart DNS.
Now that's like
for.
The best of both worlds, because that's what you're missing out on, is you're missing out on the ability to geolocate yourself somewhere else. And so you can check on your credit card and you can do your banking when they have cracked down and said, no, you can't do that. You can check the Social Security page. I'm assuming. That's one of the complaints that we've heard in here, is people can't use the Social Security page without a VPN. Well, that's really cool, and at the same price.
Yeah.
Good VPN for free.
Yeah, if you're a paid subscriber.
All right.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it said in here. You get VPN.
Well, I already got the Smart DNS.
So, but the Smart DNS.
The page and.
I'm done with the
Turbio.
Yeah, I think it's your next step.
You don't have to do the router.
And at the very least, even if you're reporting a problem to them, they're not having you do anything. You're not having to get into your router and make changes and change endpoints. That's all
at once, basically.
Yeah. I mean, as long as it's been refreshed on your end, they've got your endpoint ID, IP, the rest is up to them. They're the ones that are supposed to be providing it.
That's what I'm going to
do. Well, that was a great topic.
Yeah,
good for me.
I think I'm exhausted from it. I have no more information. Hey, but on the topic of TV and streaming, are you guys aware of YouTube TV?
Yeah.
You are?
Yeah.
Are you using it?
No, it's too expensive.
You use it at home?
No.
YouTube TV?
$40 a month?
No.
Yeah, that's a lot.
No, I don't do that.
No?
Never. That would be your sole provider then, huh?
Yeah, they have like over 50 networks. It's all streaming. One of the things I found interesting, and this is why I want to find somebody that's using it, is they're offering an unlimited DVR function. And the very nature of what they're offering means that you could be DVRing things. I mean, this is my assumption. You could be DVRing things that are broadcasting at the same time.
Well, how would How could you use this, for example, traveling in the States?
What?
The YouTube system.
Well, the YouTube TV would just stream through your internet. The difference is it's not on demand. It's live streaming. It's live streaming ABC, NBC, CBS. It's live streaming Fox. In fact, let me bring up the list real quick because it had all these major networks in it.
So then you can record a program as it's being streamed.
Well, and that's what
and
I found.
Watch it later without commercials.
That's what these boxes are good for?
That's what I found most intriguing about what I was looking at.
Boxes are good for in motorhomes.
Was
they just hook up to the internet? Once you're in the U.S., it just runs off of your email address. That's it.
ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC, AMC, BBC America, BBC World News, Bravo, CNBC, NBC Sports. FX, FXX, Headline News, IFC, Sci-Fi. I mean, it's like a cable package. TNT, Wii, Fox News, Comet, the CW, Disney XD, Disney. There's like three different Disneys. In fact, they must be in bed with Disney. I see a lot of Disney properties here. But it does sound expensive. It's $40 a month. You get 6 accounts per household. So for $40 a month, you can have like each one of them could have their own account.
That's good.
Yeah, that and the cloud DVD with no storage limits means to me that you could have a checklist of your favorite programs, and it's just I would bet there's no literal recording you're doing. You're just saying, set this one aside, set this one aside, set this one aside. And undoubtedly, you're one of tens of thousands of people that also want to see that episode.
But are you going to get that in Mexico?
That's why I want to find somebody using this. I want to see if it runs across the VPN or if it would work with the Smart DNS.
They have a 30-day free trial?
They do have a 30-day free trial.
Are guinea pig?
Yeah, what's going on here?
Honestly, I was surprised to see so many people that were aware of it. Why are you guys so aware of this? I only recently, in the last week, I discovered this.
We're
watching, I'm watching YouTube, but it advertises it.
Yeah, they advertise it. Yeah.
They advertise it on YouTube. I haven't seen it. But I tend most of my activities happen located in Mexico, and maybe it's not being rolled out to Mexico yet.
You don't have enough time on your hands.
That's right.
The thing about all these is you have to have unlimited streaming. You can't have
bandwidth
meters.
Caps.
No, you can't. Yeah, meter.
I've got two questions. And when you're finished up there,
yeah.
Okay. Well, have you seen that new dot?
Before I leave this, I want to tell you the thing that I want to see. Is I want to see if you can DVR. I'm not so worried about the streaming being available in Mexico. I imagine it's not. In fact, there is a subnote here that says some networks not available in all areas. Right. So I can imagine that there are a number. But if they don't know the area you're in, then nothing's stopping you from putting on that list of DVR. Any of the content that's available, right? And so maybe the DVR is available outside of a local area, right? It would be associated with an account. The account would be wherever you happen to be. You wouldn't be streaming live. I just wonder if...
Well, that's your homework for tonight. You can tell us about it.
Yeah. Our going away present.
Yeah, I don't have enough to do I?
No.
Anyway, that was my reasoning behind wanting to find somebody that's been doing this stuff. Go ahead, Ed. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
I got an email the other day, or not an email, but a Facebook showed a little orange dot that they called it a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Yeah.
It was $95 a month. I just wonder if anybody's heard anything about it or.
$95 a month?
Sounds expensive.
Yeah. Well, it's usually $9 a day.
Well, I saw it,
$95
a month.
We had talked about something
a
while back.
About that.
I forget what it was called. But it was like $9 a day for unlimited downloading.
Right.
And you could purchase it daily, or you could purchase it monthly, or you could purchase in a package of 6 months to a year. And every one of those made the price cheaper.
Unless they changed the price.
That's, mine's at $95 a month. And then if you had to buy the dot, it's $149.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds That's like it. What we talked about.
Oh, then they got a monthly price on it.
I'm sorry, Ed, we became experts in it for a week, yeah. And then we've all forgotten it.
You say $95 for the month? Well, if you're traveling somewhere, it would be worth it.
Unlimited, yeah, unlimited wireless anywhere you're at, that sounds worth it.
That would be, yes.
Yeah, I mean, do your Netflix, do all your communications anywhere you happen to be, rural areas.
Yeah.
Next question, using your cell phone for a hotspot.
Yes?
What kind of speed do you get off a Wi-Fi network with?
Well, it depends on your cell and your cell network. Right now we're getting crazy speeds under 4G. Under LTE here in town, we can get between 50 to 100 megabits a second. And so that translates to whatever... I mean, you have to have the equipment that supports it, and yeah. You have to be near a cell that supports it, and then your Wi-Fi has to support high-speed Wi-Fi, so it can't be an old Wi-Fi device.
I have a Samsung 5, and I can only get 3G.
There you go.
When I was in Tucson, I was able to get 4G, but down here, I can only get 3G.
I got 4G.
Well, and it's because your phone came from, like, a Verizon network, didn't
no.
it?
No.
Something like that?
No. My phone came from, actually, it's an Arabic. It's a dual SIM I bought on eBay.
Okay.
And it is Arabic, but...
Wait, it's a Samsung that supports dual SIM?
Yeah.
Well, that's
Mine
cool.
Mine does, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't use it anymore.
The second SIM?
I don't
SIM?
Need to use it anymore because they've perfected this thing now, so when you go across the border, only place you can't use it is in Verizon. Like, when we were up in Utah last summer... And all those areas that are Verizon, it won't work. As long as you're in AT&T or T-Mobile area. Now, it works in T-Mobile in Tucson, but when you go up to Phoenix, it switches over to AT&T.
I have Verizon because it works everywhere.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But the Mexican, this is Mexican.
Verizon and Mexican. So.
I'm very happy with my Huawei, but the government isn't.
Yeah. Well, now they're changing. Trump is changing.
Well, ZTE, this is what I heard just, what was it, yesterday?
Yeah.
Is Trump's going to work with the Chinese president to try and get...
because he wants to build something in China.
ZTE is the biggest offender of what they're upset with.
Right.
Huawei is the one that they should be working on getting back into stores. Why would he be working with ZTE? They have blatantly... Yeah.
Because they worked with them on North Korea. So.
Yeah. It's nuts. I mean, I think it's nuts to do all that blocking
you
in the first place.
On the other end, don't you?
Who's raising their hand?
Oh, that's your YouTube. Smart ENS says it unlocks all YouTube channels.
The YouTube TV specifically?
It says YouTube channels. I was just looking through here to see... If it had YouTube channel, which one, in their services, it's listed. And right up at the top, it says, unlocks all the YouTube.
It's interesting what Google's doing here, because they've got standard YouTube Red, and YouTube TV now.
I bet that's not YouTube TV.
Well,
I could try
one way to find out, Scott.
Well, I need one of you retired folks to spend some time playing with this and report. YouTube Red is a on demand.
Oh, really?
YouTube brings you the best of the video channels worldwide.
So that sounds more like getting around the geolocation of their standard service, but it doesn't necessarily address the live streaming service that they've created.
All channels.
Jim, now you have homework.
Ed likes to do that stuff.
YouTube Red is a on-demand, pay-for movie, TV show streaming service, like a Netflix or a Hulu. And it's just growing right now. And they've been creating some of their own content. So just like Amazon's doing, Hulu's doing.
Amazon disappoints me because, Amazon Prime... All these things available, yeah. An old copy of I Love Lucy for $3.
right.
for a half hour show? I don't think so.
But you know, Amazon Prime raised their price retroactively. They moved. They raised the price last week. It's effective November, March 8th.
Let me see.
So they sent you a back bill?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
No, no. It wasn't a back bill. I got it. And what it said on, like, May 10th, I got an email saying that they raised the price on May 1st. Right?
No, mine said March 8th.
Mine said May 1st.
Right after the billing cycle. Oh.
My billing cycle is in October. And so what they were doing was telling me when it comes around in October, you're going to pay this new price.
No, mine was renewed in March 8th, so they went back to March 8th.
Reread that. You might be getting the next year for the same price.
I went back and checked the number, and it was higher.
Can they do that?
They did it.
But is that legal?
Why can't they? Messenger.
Wow, if that's legal, then we got to start paying more attention to our terms of service that we agree to. Because
who reads that?
Right.
Page 87.
Right. Yeah, page 87. Right under that part about loaning your password to your family.
It's under the heading fine print.
That is really interesting.
I thought it was too.
Because I read mine, and it's like, wait, you can't do that. It's May 10th. You can't just send me something saying you've changed the price on the 1st. And then I read it farther down, and it says, so when you are billed in October, you will be billed at this new rate. And I'm like, well, I guess you can do that. Or I could cancel. I don't see that happening anytime soon. The Prime aspect is I think it's a good one. I mean, the idea of free shipping, and then they start throwing music and they start throwing videos on top. Like, it doesn't have to be great videos as long as it's still free shipping. And it doesn't have to be free shipping, but it always has to be free shipping. But like, have you looked at their music collection? There's like 2 million songs.
No.
Yeah. And that's available here in Mexico right now with your US Prime account. So, like, we've got an Amazon Echo, and we listen to music through it all the time.
Yeah, but to download a piece of music, I'm winding up paying 99 cents for it.
Well, if you purchase it.
Because I purchase it, so I put it into a DVD.
Yeah. And so they've got a service on Amazon that is unlimited music. That
but you have to listen.
Well, that unlimited music allows you to download it. But you have to, well, the Prime account allows you to do it as well. They have an Amazon app for music, and you can download and carry your music offline on your device. But I think the unlimited music account, I believe you can move that to devices. I know your purchases that you're doing, definitely you can move them to other devices. Maybe the unlimited you can't. Now that I think about it, maybe you can't. But you know, the Apple Music, if you get into Apple, they let you do all that stuff. You're able to move it across devices, and I've often wondered what happens when you cancel from that. Why can't you just subscribe to Apple and download all the music and then cancel your subscription? See, Amazon's addressed that issue with Prime by just saying, oh yeah, you can download it, but you have to use our app, and their app authorizes all that music. If you're not using their app, then you can't listen to the music. Apple can't do that because they don't have an app in everything. Well, I guess they do now, don't they? They have an iTunes app in Amazon or in Android. So I guess they could do the same thing. Whole bunch of speculation on stuff I don't know.
I took an old cell phone, and there's a website called Django.com.
Okay.
And I took the old cell phone, I turned all the stuff off.
Right.
And I hooked it up to a little speaker, and then you can pick all the music you want, the kinds of music you want, and I just play it all day long in the house.
Well,
and it's free.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Django.com.
Django.com.
For my phone and laptop.
Say that again?
I have XM for...
Oh, XM? You've downloaded that?
That the app for my phone and
not here, he's back in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Which
one? I pay an extra $5 a month.
To be able to access it through streaming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's all the channels.
Hey, I brought a couple of topics. I got one that took me by surprise. I didn't realize you could do this stuff with Google Docs. And maybe you guys are interested in this, but Google Docs has a built-in OCR function, okay, optical character recognition.
Which one's that?
Google Docs. Your Google account, your Google account allows you access to a Google service called Drive.
Yeah.
And you can upload PDFs and images to your Google Drive. Then you can open those using Google Docs. And Google Docs does an OCR translation on them.
That?
Which one?
Docs.
D-O-C. D-O-C-S. Docs.
Docs.
Yeah.
Documents.
So Google Drive is a cloud storage service that is combined with their Office suite. So you have a spreadsheet program called Google Sheets. You have a word processing program called Google Docs. They've made a large subset of this, a very functional subset of this, available to you for free for using Google, having a Google account. And one of the I've had people in this group and customers ask me about optical character recognition. This is like you have a printed piece of paper and you need to digitalize it. Well, with Google Docs, what you could do is you could start out by scanning that using your equipment and you end up with a photo or a PDF. And then you can dump that in your Google Drive and choose to open it with Google Docs from that same drive. And when it opens up, it will translate that image into a word processing document that you could edit.
You need to proof it.
Right. You would need to proof it, but it's insane how accurate this stuff is becoming. Yeah.
Because I recently purchased an OCR program
to
handle Mexican documents.
Yeah.
But if this is free, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would definitely give this a shot. I had no idea this was a capability until recently. Apparently, it's been in there for a while, but nobody's paid any attention to it. So when you get the picture or the PDF document in Docs, the action you do when you're looking at it there in your drive, in your Google Drive. I'm sorry, they used to call everything Google Docs, and then they changed the name to Google Drive. And I've been doing this stuff for so long, I get the two of them mixed up all the time.
Which one is it?
So Google Drive is the cloud storage space, and it works in conjunction with Docs, Google Sheet. They've got a PowerPoint. I can't remember the name of it. I should just bring it up. I've got a Google
and
thing here.
Google Docs open Microsoft Word documents.
Yes. Yeah, and they're highly compatible with
well, that'd be good because
well, what I've been doing with my
DOCX
is I would take a Mexican document, a page of it, and I would copy it. I mean, I would scan it, get it into a Word file, and then I could put it into Google Translate, translate the whole page.
Okay.
Without having to type it.
Right.
I got a free one of those the other day. I was trying to remember the name, but I can't. But my wife was doing a bunch of translations for a Spanish deal. She had a whole book full of pages, and we ran the pages through, pushed the button, and it turned it out to English. And she read it, and it was fairly accurate.
Turns it into funny English.
Were you using Google Translate?
No, I think it's all in one. I'll bring the name next week.
Yeah, that would be interesting to know.
It's a pretty good deal. It's just an online service. It's free.
Well, Google Drive, which is the all-encompassing cloud storage, it works in conjunction with Google Docs for word processing, Google Sheets for spreadsheet, Google Slides, which is like a PowerPoint, Google Forms, which is it's basically for database stuff, Google Drawings for graphics, so you have a draw program, Google My Maps, so you can build your own maps using the Google Maps system, Google Sites I know nothing about, but all of that is encompassed in Drive. So you update or you upload a image to Google Drive, and then with the right mouse button you click on that drive, on that image, and it has an option that says open with docs. And when you choose open with docs, it does optical character recognition on that image and puts it in as a document to be edited. I just thought it was cool. I thought I'd let you guys know about it.
On OpenOffice, you can use PDFs too. I use OpenOffice. You use the other one.
I use LibreOffice. Yeah. But what you're saying is if you open a PDF in there, it becomes
a... You can make a PDF and everything in there.
But can you bring a PDF in as a editable Word doc, a word processing document?
That I don't know.
Because that's what this is talking about. This is about taking editable. The contents of a PDF document and turning it into an editable. I mean, occasionally, people have needs for this kind of stuff. And the fact that Google's got it there for free makes it really
convenient.
I
thought the point of the PDF was so people couldn't change it.
Yeah, until Google Docs. Well, the real point of the PDF was to provide a digital document that was formatted in a print fashion so that it would appear on any device in the form that it was intended to appear.
And you could take it to a printer, and they would print it, and it would look
exactly the same. Yeah. That's right. That's
the
idea.
All the characters would be the same.
A PDF is actually a scripting language that makes everything look the way it's supposed to appear. And it doesn't matter what device it's on, doesn't matter what printer it's on. That's the way it's intended to look.
Can I ask a question on that?
Sure.
On some of the PDFs, I try to keep in my computer manuals on different things that I have, including programs. And sometimes they go sideways. And so you're trying to find page 165, you got to move them a page at a time. Where those that go up and down, you can scroll up and down.
Can't you change them back over to portrait?
Well, I don't know how. That's why I'm asking.
Well, and mostly you can't. I mean, because of the nature of PDF. You can envision a manual for something. And in the physical version of it might be this large flip book.
Yeah.
Right? And you can, in the PDF, you can set it to be landscape. You can say that you want the scrolling to go. And unless you have control over that PDF, then you're stuck working in that format. That's because that's the way they intended it to be. You might try, and I'm not saying that this is the solution, but you might try alternate PDF readers. Because you'd be looking for features that allowed you to make changes to that kind of stuff. And off the top of my head, I can think of only one alternate PDF reader, which is Foxit. Foxit is a PDF reader. I used to use it all the time.
What's it called?
Foxit. It's like the animal fox and then the word it after it, IT. But you could also try opening any of these PDFs in any of the browsers, because I think they all support PDFs now. Opera, Firefox, Chrome, they all read PDFs, and they have their own feature set for reading PDFs, so you might find a solution in there. Google Drive has a PDF reader in it, too. And so you might see what kind of options you get with like what we were just discussing, you could put it in Google Drive and do the optical character recognition on it and see what pops up in Docs. And maybe that's easier for you to work with than the original PDF. So there's that.
This is a new subject.
Okay. I've also got one more new subject,
okay.
But go ahead.
This is on a Mexican car.
Okay.
Okay, we have our new car. It has, you can put the DVDs in, has the screen. Okay, so we went to test it yesterday, and it has a region in it.
It's region coded.
And now we tried to play our CD, so when we go on a trip.
Wait,
but
your
it's
music?
Region coded.
Your music is region coded.
And so is the DVDs. It says.
I've never heard of CDs being region coded.
So it has to be in Spanish?
No.
No.
U.S. is region 1.
It must have mariachi music or it will not play.
U.S. is region 1.
You have to put a sombrero on when you stick the disc in.
But Mexico is region 4.
So it had to have been purchased in Mexico.
So, well, we're trying.
It's a Mexican
car. We went online trying to figure out. You can change it to region 0.
Right.
Which no matter where you go, it'll play.
It should work, yeah.
But we don't know how to change it. So I called GM yesterday.
They probably won't change it.
Mexico and I spoke it to English, and she said I needed to call in the U.S. So I called the GM dealer in Tucson that I've been to before, and they're not sure about it, so we're going to take the car up next week. And he said if you had to have it changed, it would be like $500. Ooh. I said, well, it wouldn't be worth it. I said, are you sure there isn't some way to change the region in the BIOS, which I don't know how to get to on?
I think you're doing it wrong. I think you should take your car into Guaymas to that audio stereo shop.
The place in Guaymas Norte?
There's one in Guaymas Norte. I was thinking about one on the main strip.
The Pro?
The brand new one?
Yeah.
Well, I've been there before. Yeah.
Okay, I would take it to them. Because they're going to know exactly what your problem is.
Which one are we talking about? Which store?
I was thinking of one that's on the main road, but the fact that you said Pro.
You mean by the coffee place?
Yeah, that's what I was
Pro,
thinking.
Yeah, Pro, isn't it? Or maybe they changed their name now. It used to be called Pro something.
I was thinking it was like Pro Audio or
something.
It's pretty obviously right there, though. I would find somebody that's made their profession with car stereos here in Guaymas.
Okay.
And tell them your dilemma, because undoubtedly they've dealt with it before. Because the region coding thing is a problem for Mexicans. It's something we don't deal with it so much when we live in a bubble of America with American DVDs. But undoubtedly they've got American DVDs they're trying to play in their devices.
Yeah.
And so if they don't know how to fix it, they'll know the right steps to go about finding the fix for it.
Just buy them all at
Or when you go to the border, there's these guys with 500 CDs for sale while you're waiting in line.
Yeah.
Well, that guy might not be able to help you, but the guy that gave him all those CDs to sell probably could help you.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, I think you're going to have a lot more luck.
There.
Yeah. You want to go into the bowels of Guaymas and find somebody that works.
Right.
That's right. somebody using some fake name like Paco.
Yeah. Which coffee shop is it?
You could try a cloner yourself.
But it's what's on the left as you're going into town.
If you wanted to copy your...
You know, it's kind of
and then
the
it's on the left.
Linda, you're aware of that, right?
You can use a cloner like Slyfox or whatever to... Now they call it Red Fox. They changed the name. to re-record it and take off the encryption. You just have to make new CDs.
And DVDs?
And DVDs.
Hey, does it have a US?
I think it's Red Foxes. Oh. Now, it used to be Sly Fox. It's.
Does it have a USB drive? Your stereo. Does it have a USB and
thumb drive?
Thumb drive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, have you tried watching a video off the thumb drive?
No.
Because that's. I mean, honestly, we live in a world now where it's easier to download it and put it on a thumb drive than it is to...
I tried to download this particular thing, and it won't let you. Because we tried to make copies of it. And
it's copyrighted.
It's copyrighted.
Handbrake? You can try Handbrake.
Handbrake?
Yeah, Handbrake's got a good rep for ripping discs.
There's you can do this without losing it.
Oh, I lost it.
Hold on. Just tap the little button on the side.
It's been a while since we've talked about DVDs.
Do the back arrows, and maybe. Mm-hmm.
But I agree with your sentiments, Linda. I think the real fix
Red
is
alert.
To get that region code out of there.
Cody, Red Alert? No, that's not it. Oh, here's Sly Fox.
It used to be Sly Fox. Now they changed it to Red Fox.
Okay, redfox.biz.
I don't know if you guys remember, but with Windows XP, Windows Vista, and Windows 7, if you were to... I said 7. I'm not sure if that was true in 7, but it was definitely Vista and XP. If you were to take a DVD, like you rented one from Blockbuster here in Guaymas, and stick it in your computer would recognize the region code and say, we need to swap over to region 4. You're only allowed to swap your region 3 or 4 times. I can't remember the exact number. Yeah. And it would do a countdown on your region swap. So, and this was something that they did with Windows PCs. So if you stuck in that Mexican disk, you were at region 4 until you put in an American disk. And then you put in an American disk and you'd get the warning saying, for you to play this, you need to swap your region over to region 1 so that you can watch this disk. You only have 2 more swaps before it'll be set in stone. Mm-hmm. And so on your last swap, it would burn the PROM and say, this is now that region. It is now a region 1. There is no swapping, and it happened in the hardware as well as the software. So you could reload your Windows, your DVD was still stuck at that last region. And very few of the DVD players that were manufactured like that could you go in and flash them and make them go back to a region code. And so we used to use software that would intercept the region and spit to the device the region code it was expecting. So that whole swapping process would never happen. But you'd have to run this little piece of software down in your taskbar, and it would grab that from when you'd stick a DVD in, it would go, oh, this is region 4, but this player likes region 1, and it would send region 1 to the player.
Do you think that a Mexican's CD DVD burner would be region sensitive?
If you're burning it yourself, you're picking the region whether you know it or not. And most of your own personal burning, the default would be zero region.
Yeah. Okay, but playback.
So with a zero region, all DVDs are supposed to play it. However, in the United States, for a while there, we sold DVD players that would not recognize zero region. It was considered a pirating tool, and so you couldn't get a player that would play a zero region DVD. I don't know if any of that's true anymore, but back in the day, it was the biggest frustration.
All right.
I don't know if anybody has
I'll
any information on that.
First, before I go to Tucson.
And you had one more item.
I did have one more item I thought you guys might find interesting. It was about USB-C. So I know we're going to have one more meeting, and then we're taking off for the summer. And you guys are going to be tempted by electronic devices that are new and shiny and have new capacities. One of the new capacities that a lot of these devices are going to start sporting is the USB-C port. They're all over the new Macintoshes, but they're also going to be out on the new cell phones, too. And if you're not familiar with what USB-C is, this is a USB port that is bidirectional. You don't have to be concerned about which direction you plug it into your device.
My iPad does that.
Okay, so you have... Yeah, the iPads have a Thunderbolt port that does that, and it's a wafer that you stick in to the port. This is an orifice that you stick into a port. It's slightly different. The new Macintosh MacBook laptops, MacBook Pro laptops, are sporting this port.
My
Novio. Yeah, right. Now you got me doing it.
It has it.
Lenovo. I had to spell it in my head to see it right. Yeah, it has a USB-C port. And I was telling you guys about this great deal I got on a pretty laptop for my wife this last time I was in the States. Paid something like $240 for it, and it had a detachable tablet screen. You guys remember this? And it came with a USB-C port, and I was really impressed that I could get into a USB-C port at such a cheap price. So what I've discovered recently, not with that device, I still need to go look at it, is that USB-C is a fairly arbitrary distinction. In fact, it doesn't have anything to do with speed. Speed is a completely separate issue. And it has very little to do with compatibility outside of USB, because that's a separate issue. The USB-C designation is more a physical designation. What USB-C is telling you is that you can physically flip the port on it. You can plug it in this way, or you can flip it over and plug it in that way. And it's also telling you that you can run power across it. And it's also telling you that you can run power across it both directions. And it's bidirectional, both directions. You can run power and data both directions across this cable. But then after that, you got to be careful with this USB-C, because the cables matter and the devices matter. And if you're using it to charge devices, the charger matters. And they're not necessarily compatible with what you're trying to use it for. So these are things that we're going to have to start paying attention to as these devices come out with USB-C ports. I use the example again of my wife's new laptop, which converts into a tablet. I'm imagining I can't use the USB-C port for powering it or for charging the battery. And I make that assumption because it comes with a separate power adapter for the device. Chester, I think your laptop comes with a separate power adapter for your new laptop, even though it has a USB-C port on it. Even though the USB-C standard makes allowances for being the battery charger, in those devices, it hasn't been used that way. So you might, and I don't know if this is true, but you might even actually end up damaging the device if you had a USB-C charger and you plugged it into that port. You might damage the device because it's not intended to be charged that way. What else is interesting is that we've got these different standards, USB 2, USB 3, USB 3.1. I guess I wasn't paying attention, but there's a generation 1 of USB 3.1 and a generation 2 of USB 3.1. All right, so there's two different standards of USB 3.1. Your device using USB-C could be any of those standards.
Are those based on speed?
Well, they affect speed, yeah. So like USB 2 is 480 megabits per second, whereas USB 3.1 generation 2 is up to 10 gigabits a second. Right, so easily 20 times faster than USB 2. This is important because as you get into USB-C devices, inevitably you're getting into USB-C chargers and cables as well. And the cables have to be rated for your activity. So you got a new cell phone. You take out some random USB-C cable, you plug that in, or you plug it into a charger. Your new phone's supposed to be able to charge in 30 minutes, and it's not working. It could be the charger, the phone, or the cable between the two is not meeting the standard for the fast charging. If you're in the Mac world, you end up working with Thunderbolt. That's their high-speed connector. USB-C on a Macintosh supports Thunderbolt connections. The PCs could support Thunderbolt as well. They just haven't so far. In a Mac world, the USB-C cable has to be a Thunderbolt-compatible cable, a Thunderbolt 3-compatible cable. There's two different types of cables. They look exactly the same. One is called active. Thunderbolt with an active cable can give you up to 40 gigabits a second, which is four times higher than the highest number we just set. Right? I mean, this is amazingly fast data transfers. 4K video, fast, complete backups. I mean, what this opens to our world is amazing. But this cable standard is going to be what's confusing people. So you could have a Thunderbolt hard drive, you could have your Macintosh, and you could have a USB-C cable between them, and you could drop from 40 gigabits a second down to 480 megabits a second. I mean, that's a... Can I do the math on that in my head real quick? That's 80 times slower simply because you have the wrong cable, even though it fits everything and looks like the right standard. So if you find yourself buying a device this summer, and it may be sporting USB-C, you may want to pay attention to what activities you plan on doing with it. And a good example to me would be you buy a new cell phone and you buy a new laptop, and your new cell phone does things like 4K video, and you want to get that over to your laptop as quickly as possible. Then it would be very important the USB-C cable that you buy. Now, in the standards, are you guys still interested in this? Because I got more information. In the standards, there is the full functional cable, the fully functional cable. It's written in the standard. It's what handles the power. It handles the data rate transmission. You can look for that as a marketing term, because it's a standard term as well. And if you're concerned about getting the overall can-do-everything cable for USB-C, you can look for the fully functional USB-C cable. Undoubtedly, there's going to be a distinction in prices, and it will be along these standards. So you can buy a $5 cable or a $20 cable, and you're looking at them going, what's the difference? You're looking for the words fully functional on the $20 cable. The cable has to support power delivery. A standard cable that doesn't support power delivery will charge something like a phone or an iPod, but it will only do it at the USB power rates of 3 amps, 60 watts at most. You might have a brand new cell phone with a USB-C and marketing telling you that you can charge the battery in 30 minutes. But if you don't have
the cable
with power delivery, PD, then it's only going to charge it at that lower speed. It has to have the USB-C power delivery option. And that will allow the cable, and that's the cable. That's not the charger. It's not the device. That's the cable
that
needs to support that.
And the transformer has to comply also.
Yes, the charger has to comply, the device has to comply, and the cable has to comply for you to take advantage of that. So I found all this very interesting stuff because it looked like this standard to take over everything. It's the ultimate standard. But there's a lot of stuff convoluted in this standard. I wouldn't be surprised if my wife's new computer's USB, because of the price I paid for it, it may have a USB-C port on it, but they could have wired it right to USB 3, not even 3.1. They could have just wired it to USB 3, because all this stuff is backwards and forwards compatible. So I would see slower data rates, and I would see slower charging off of that port, even though it looks like it should be able to transfer. And it wouldn't matter the standard cable I used. It wouldn't matter the device I was plugging it into, because the port was originally... It's a physical standard. I don't know. I found all that very interesting. USB-C also supports DisplayPort. And in the Mac world, it's being used to plug in monitors. And what this also means is that we will see monitors in the future that you could plug a USB-C into to power them and to present the video. But it's not inconceivable to have more USB-C ports coming out of that monitor to power other devices.
So Daisy chain.
Yeah, similar to that. Yeah. So it can power, but it could also provide power. The new Macs have really taken advantage of this. Their MacBook Pro, you can have a setup with two Thunderbolt displays, like 5K displays, plugged into a hub that plugs right into your MacBook Pro. There's one cable that goes to your MacBook Pro. That one cable recharges the battery and it allows you to feed two monitors plus the laptop off of that one cable. So they've really done a nice way of tying that together with their technology, and the PCs are trying to catch up with that kind of thinking. But I would bet if you're looking at a price on a device that has USB-C ports on it at a unreasonably low price, they've cut corners on that standard to provide you with what looks like, I mean, they're using it like a marketing device. They're like, oh, it's got the latest cables. It's got the latest ports on it. But you'd have to dig deeper into the description of the device to see what it actually supports. It's conceivable that you couldn't run a video through that port because of the way the standard's been written. That port could be hooked to a USB 3, like I was describing with my wife's computer, which would give it no capacity to send video through it to a monitor that supports USB-C. Or just by buying the wrong cable, you could lose that ability, because the cable has to support video going through it as well. Anyway, I got all of this information from a very insightful YouTube video. And I'm going to put the link on our website on sccclub.org. So if you guys find yourself looking at new devices and want to have a primer on how this stuff works, you can take a look at this video. He does a really good job going through everything that it's capable of and all that. And I'd give him a little plug here, but I can't remember his name. I think it's like Tio Joe, something like that. Tion Joe. But I'll put the link on sccclub.org. So if you guys are interested in this stuff, you can follow that link and see the video. Hey, and we're 10 minutes over.
All right.
And everybody is still here, which makes me feel like I've been talking about interesting stuff.
We had a good meeting.
It's still awake, too.
Still awake.
A lot of notes.
We got one more meeting next week, and then we're done for what I call our season until the first Tuesday in October. Thanks for showing up.
Hey, first Tuesday in October.
Is there anything that we didn't get to cover? Anybody come here with a question they didn't get answered?
Bitcoin.
Time to go. See you guys.
First Tuesday in October is the second.
Wow, I think that should work.
That should work. Tuesday
yeah.
the second.
Tuesday the second.
Oh, it's okay. Did you say first Tuesday in October?
Yes. First Tuesday in October.
And where?
We'll send out an announcement if for some reason that doesn't work. But I'll plan on it.
That's what we've been trying to do.
Is it a Bose or whatever?
I have not. Let me sign off real quick. This has been the San Carlos Computer Club. I am Scott Stimson with International Computer Solutions. If you have computer needs anywhere on the internet, I'd appreciate you getting a hold of us at internationalcs.net. If you've enjoyed this, I'd encourage you to check out more of them. I make recordings of each one of our meetings. I make access from our website at sccclub.org. You can see our videos. You can listen to previous meetings. You can subscribe to us as a podcast. Go wherever you get your podcasts and search for the San Carlos Computer Club. Until next Tuesday, this is Scott Stimson saying tech on, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye. Turn that off.
So we need to find out where you get.
We'll turn this off. Everything worked on the internet today. That's awesome.